The Rams are back where they belong, where it all began in 1946. The last 20 years have been a bad dream. Now, it's time for the Ramble On Podcast. Here are your hosts, Steve Mason and Ryan Abraham.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Ramble On Podcast. I'm Steve Mason from ESPN LA 710, Mason in Ireland show, of course. And Ryan Abraham is here from USCFootball.com and LARamsReport.com. Ryan, NFL draft is in the books. Exciting time for Rams.
It is very exciting, Steve. Got a week to digest it. I'm really happy we're going to get to dissect some of these picks, especially when you got like fourth and sixth round picks that maybe a lot of the Ram fans haven't heard of. So we can talk to we're gonna talk to Tony again and get some information on that. But just to let people know, if you want to follow the podcast, you can go to RamsRambleOn.com and you'll find our podcast page. Or if you go to iTunes.com, if you got, on any of your devices, if you want to download the podcast and subscribe, just search for Ramble On Podcast and we'll be in there as well. Our Twitter account is LA_RamsReport. My Twitter account is @InsideTroy. Steve's @VeniceMace, and our guest, Steve, @TonyBruin, I believe.
Yeah, @TonyBruin, right?
Yeah, that's it. That's the Twitter handle.
Very big UCLA fan.
Cusa is here. He's from LastWordOnSports.com. He joined us right before the NFL draft, and you were on Mason in Ireland today, and I was bragging that you, it's tough enough to call a pick in the first round, but you managed to call one out for the Rams in the fourth round in Pharaoh Cooper, the wide receiver. Before we get to that, let's start out with Jared Goff. I know we talked a little about him this last week. Today, as we record this on Friday, May the 6th, the rookie OTAs are going on in Oxnard, so all the rookies are there, including Jared Goff. A little bit of time to reflect on it, Tony, and with the sense now that he is going to start, most likely, Les Snead kind of tipped his hand when he was with a couple of weeks ago, most likely going to start game one for the Rams. What do we have here?
Well, again, I think what we talked about last week, I think everyone, now that, as you put it, they've had a week to digest the draft and take a look at who went where. With Goff, you're getting a guy who is NFL ready. He's got the physical attributes. He's got a professional NFL level arm. He does a great job with the read progression. So he's already mentally NFL ready. Physically, he's got a couple of things to work on, because of the type of offense that they ran at Cal when they ran kind of a modified spread offense. When I say modified, they weren't chucking the ball 40 yards downfield every play or having the quarterback sprint out. They were looking down at a second or third receiver. But he needs to adapt a little bit to hitting that first receiver over the middle, finding the cushion and the zone, things like that. But those are all things that most rookie quarterbacks are going to have to learn anyway. So when you're trying to teach it to a guy who already has the physical attributes that you're looking for, I think it's a given that Goff is going to wind up being the starter by the time the season starts.
Hey, Tony, there wasn't a lot of drama as far as who the Rams were going to pick. It just kind of came out there. Everyone felt it was going to be Jared Goff. But now you've had the, chance to watch how that all unfolded. Goff going first, Wentz going second. And then, over this past week or so, any kind of surprises or did you get any reads from how this went down that the Rams kind of had their guy all along, or any kind of read from all of that, how it all went down those first couple of picks?
Yeah, I think when you kind of do the post-mortem on the draft, while the Rams obviously were keeping everything close to the vest because that's what everybody does when you've got the first or second round or first or second overall pick in the draft, that's just what teams do. It seems to me that they really honed in on Goff pretty early on and then just took their time allocation with the pick just, for the TV drama of it all and give the ESPN guys more time to chat about what the obvious was that was about to happen. I don't really think that there was any sense that they were going to go anywhere but Goff with that first pick.
What I thought was funny is there was a story afterwards that they waited until the last possible moment before even telling Goff. And he and his family and his agent were sitting there as the clock wound down, and the agent all of a sudden said, I think I might have been hoodwinked. So he was actually At one point, they thought, geez, maybe I'm not the pick. So they played it as dramatic as they possibly could down to the wire, even with Goff and his family. All right, so let's talk about, we know that the Rams, they've got a limited number of playmakers. Todd Gurley is going to run the football. Tavon Austin has demonstrated that he's a versatile guy out of the backfield or in the slot. They've got a couple of returning guys, Brian Quick and Kenny Britt, who've never seemed to really get any real traction. So they go fishing for wide receivers and tight ends. Start out with the first pick in the fourth round, tight end Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, Higbee's a good player out of Western Kentucky. He actually started at Western Kentucky as a wide receiver, but he's 6 feet, 6 inches tall. And so they asked him to put on some weight to move to tight end. He got up to about 245, 247 by the time he was through at Western Kentucky. So he's going to need to put on a little bit more weight, a little bit more muscle mass to play tight end in the NFL. But he adapted to the change in position pretty well. So he's got the body frame to work with, needs to work on his edge blocking a little bit as a tight end because, again, he came up from high school all the way through his first few years at Western Kentucky as a wide receiver. So he's still learning some of the finer points of playing tight end, but clearly there was a lot of progression. Good hands, didn't have many drops at all during the season. I think his ratio was something like only one drop for every 14 catches. So he's definitely got the skills. He missed a few games with a sprained knee, but it's nothing major. He went through all the pro day drills and didn't show any problems with the knee at all. So I think it's a good get. It surprised me that they took him first in the fourth round with their first pick available in the fourth round, but it's a good get. He needs some work. He's got a little bit of a legal problem. Because
we should explain that. Yeah, he was arraigned this week on second degree assault and second degree evading police plus public intoxication for an event in Bowling Green, Kentucky, where Western Kentucky is located.
Right, exactly. His attorney seems confident that the charges can be handled. You don't want to minimize anyone's police charges in any capacity, but I'm certain that the Rams did their homework on this before they took him and got as much as they can possibly get out of his attorney and his agent and whomever else he has consulting him, and felt confident enough to go ahead and use their first pick in the fourth round to get Higbee. So I would imagine you're going to be seeing him during camp.
Hey, Tony.
Actually, if we can just talk here for a minute. I mean, it's a podcast, so we can just talk.
Sure.
One of the parts of this assault case that are actually, this makes it kind of changes it a little bit. He assaulted a guy. His last name was Asala, Nawaf Asala. And apparently there were racial slurs thrown around because Asala is Muslim. And at one point, Asala began shouting at Tyler Higbee in Arabic. So it actually sounds like there's a story here that we may hear more about as this case moves along. So I don't know. That just jumps out at me as kind of it sounds kind of ugly.
It does have that potential. I've read similar reports, but I've also read that some of the allegations, they're having a hard time with witnesses backing up the allegations. So, I clearly not being there and not having all the insight on every step of the legal process, going to read what we get our hands on. But it doesn't sound good, but it doesn't sound overwhelmingly like Higbee's going to face some serious jail time either.
Hey, Tony, I got to see Tyson Helton, the offensive coordinator from Western Kentucky, up close the past couple of months at USC Spring Football. He now, is coaching at USC. It looked like they changed the offense quite a bit as far as the tight ends are concerned. Before, it was a lot of kind of short sideline passes, and they had the tight ends going down the field and catching longer passes, going down seams and stuff. It just seemed a lot different. Higbee does seem like one of those guys that can kind of stretch the field a little bit, but like you said, probably more of a pass catcher than a blocker. You know, the Rams released Jared Cook. It'll be interesting to see how they want to try to fit him in there, because I'm sure they're going to want him, you know, blocking too, trying to steal the edge for big number 30 there.
Well, I think you've got a good point, Ryan, in that, again, going back to his size and his body frame and the fact that he came in as a wide receiver, he obviously had the skill to go downfield. They asked him to become a bigger wide receiver slash medium-sized tight end, however you want to phrase it. But the guy had 8 touchdowns as a tight end, you know, in an offense that, like, as you say, had a lot of downfield weapons in it. He had 38 catches on the season. Not bad for a tight end. And with 8 touchdowns, that's a great ratio. So he definitely has the speed ability. It's going to be a matter of where he fits in best in the NFL. I would imagine that they do try and put some weight on him and at least have him play some tight end, you know, perhaps a tight end with some greater stretching ability.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the depth chart for the Rams at tight end, with Jared Cook gone, Corey Harkey is there, Lance Kendricks is there, who is a little bit more of a blocking mm-hmm. tight end. Tyler Higbee's got a chance to step up and be, you know, more of a receiving tight end in key short yardage situations.
Exactly.
Let's talk about the other tight end. We'll get to the wide receivers. Tamarack mm-hmm. Hemingway, we talked about a little bit earlier today, who seems a sort of a step behind or a step below what they're getting with Tyler Higbee.
Yeah, and Hemingway played at South Carolina State, and, you know, last week we all joked about, you know, how much ridiculous amounts of college football, you know, we all tend to watch. But I came up short in my Hemingway knowledge at South Carolina State. So prior to the draft, I actually pulled up some video of him and looked at him. He's not bad. In terms of skill set, he really looks more like a wide receiver, even though he's 6'5", 245 pounds, because he's got some decent speed. But if you're going to play him at tight end, your challenge is he doesn't like the contact over the middle. One of the things I saw on the films when I watched him is he tends to duck his head when he goes over the middle, kind of pulling back from the contact. And, you know, it makes it hard at that point when you're a quarterback and you need your tight end to stand up, know he's going to take the hit, but get his hands on the ball when the first reaction out of that player then is to protect his head. So it's, you know, it's not a bad pick. I mean, really, look, there's no loss taking a kid like this in the 6th round. Maybe he makes the team, maybe he doesn't, but there's certainly no downside to taking him. So it's a little bit of a gamble, a little bit of a risk, but really no loss on it at all.
Hey, Tony, you look at this guy. I mean, he is built. Certainly, he's a, you know, chiseled kind of physique there, like you said, 6'5", mm-hmm. 245 pounds. There does seem to be that upside there with him, and maybe it's a coin flip if he makes the team, but I think it's one of those things where, hey, it's worth the risk. The guy looks good. He hadn't really played against the toughest competition. If we get him in camp and he looks good enough and we think we can have a spot for him, then maybe, you know, it's kind of worth taking a flyer on. It's a 6th-rounder, but with, you know, the Rams only having 4th and 6th-rounders after Goff, then it seems like it's even, you know, those picks are a little more important, I guess, to the Rams than maybe some of the other teams that had a lot more picks.
Yeah, but again, as you say, Ryan, with a 6th pick, there's really not much of a gamble there. I mean, you know, he could make the team. It's like you said, he's got the physical characteristics and he could make it, but even if he doesn't, what did you lose? You put a 6th-round draft pick on him. Not that big of a deal.
All right, let's talk about Farrell Cooper, who's the guy that you said, if he's on the board, the Rams should jump at. He was there. Les Snead said this week that Farrell Cooper is kind of a slot guy. He's actually, you know what? They've got Tavon Austin, who's kind of a slot guy, and now it sounds like Farrell Cooper kind of fits into that same kind of role. Describe what the Rams got in Cooper.
Well, I mean, obviously, it's a good thing that the Rams, you know, Brass was listening to the podcast last week and, you know, big fans of Ryan and Steve, so that
yes.
they knew what to do and where to go with the pick.
And you, Tony, of course.
Clearly, yeah, well, you know, clearly they needed the guidance, and it's a good thing they listened. He is a slot receiver, but I got to tell you, I think Farrell Cooper is a multidimensional receiver. He's got the speed to go downfield. He ran a 4.55 40, so he's got the good speed. He's got the work ethic. The thing that makes him a good downfield possibility is that he hits the top speed in his route right off the line of scrimmage. He doesn't have to work his way into it. And he's got good change of direction, which again makes him a good downfield threat. So I think the Rams got a steal in this kid. Very disciplined kid. I think we mentioned last week that he comes from a military family, hard worker. You know, you hear the coaches with nothing, the coaches at South Carolina with nothing but good things to say about this kid. Never a problem on or off the field. I think the Rams got a gem for being in the fourth round. I think one of the things we talked about last week was that while there were some big names in the wide receiver position at the top of the draft with the Dotson and the Treadwells and so on, that really more than anything, it was deep at the wide receiver position. You know, there were 33 wide receivers taken in the draft. The only position with more players taken was linebacker, where I think there were 36. So it was very deep at the wide receiver position, and that allowed Cooper to drop to still be available in the fourth round. And I think the Rams made a great pick.
Yeah, Tony, certainly props to you. The fact that you called that one, and I mean, it's cool where you're like, yeah, this probably is an early fourth round kind of guy. The Rams need a wide receiver. This could work out well. Obviously, it did. Mm-hmm. You thought maybe they'd take him with the 12th pick in the fourth round. They ended up taking him with the 19th. But, you know, Steve mentioned, you know, kind of a slot guy. Do you think he can coexist with a guy like Tavon Austin already on the team? But, I mean, he's a guy that looks like he can come in and is ready to play. Like some receivers, maybe that's going to be a year out or so. He looks like someone that could come in and be a contributor right away.
I agree with that completely, Ryan. I think he's going to see the field early on during the season. And, yeah, I think he can coexist with Tavon because even if you want to call them both slot receivers, they're different type of slot receivers. Cooper is a little bit more, I don't want to overuse the term, but multidimensional in that he can be a slot receiver, but he can bust down the sideline also, and he's hard to stay with in man-to-man coverage. So I think if you have the two of them on the field at the same time, you're giving Dawson great options to work with.
All right. Then the second wide receiver that they managed to take is a guy that a lot of people are now saying is potentially one of the sleepers of the entire draft, and that is Michael Thomas. He, Les Snead said, again, unique set of skills. He says he's more of a stretch-the-field kind of guy. Describe Thomas' skill set.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I agree with you that Thomas was a steal. He's a sleeper, under-the-radar kind of pick out of Southern Miss. He's small. He's 5'9 and a half, maybe 195 pounds. Was a junior college transfer. He was played at a JUCO in Philadelphia for 2 years before he went to Southern Miss. And but he is a stretch the field kind of guy. The thing that you're going to see with Thomas, especially downfield, is he goes and gets those contested balls. I know a lot of analysts like to call them the 50-50 balls, where the defender is right on top of the receiver. Very strong hand, does very well at going and getting those balls. Also will work the middle, goes over the middle, has no problem with the contact whatsoever. He had 19 yards per catch average at Southern Miss. So you've definitely got, again, a guy who can run the slot or go downfield. You know, he's not going to see the field as much as Cooper does right away. He needs a little bit of work as a blocker on the edge, and needs some refinement, some fine tuning in his game. But I can definitely see this guy, you put him on the field, maybe even use him on special teams just to get him on the field a little bit. And he's gonna be around. He's going to play.
You know, Tony, I don't think he was invited to the combine. Maybe that's part of the reason why he was kind of flying under the radar and the Rams were so excited to get him.
Right, yeah, he was not. He did have a pro day. But again, you know, if you're Mike Thomas at Southern Miss, you don't draw as many scouts at the Southern Miss Pro Day as you do at a UCLA or USC or Alabama or Notre Dame Pro Day. So I agree with you, Ryan. That's probably why he fell as much as he did. And I think the Rams got a really good pick here.
They made one other pick in the late rounds, and that was an inside linebacker. And I don't have the name in front of me. You probably do, though, Tony.
Josh Forrest from Kentucky.
Josh Forrest from Kentucky. Yeah. It's not a bad pick. You know, he's
by the way, of the guys, that's the one I've read and heard the least about.
And again, one of those things that, you know, there was a lot of linebackers. I think we had thrown out the number earlier. There were 36 linebackers taken in the draft. So you can see where someone like Josh Forrest falls, you know, falls under the radar. He's fine. He's got good middle linebacker skills. He's not quite as big as you would like. He's 6'3", he's about 250 pounds, but he played really well at Kentucky. Like, he had 93 tackles. He had a couple of interceptions, but he is definitely a middle linebacker in that he doesn't particularly cover receivers well on the edge. He doesn't particularly cover running backs well out of the backfield, so you're really not going to have a spot for him at outside linebacker. He's going to have to be middle linebacker or bust.
Well, given the fact that the opportunity is there. Yeah,
the
Rams are moving, obviously, with Laurinaitis gone. They're moving Ogletree into an inside linebacker or a middle linebacker spot, so maybe this gives them some depth there.
Yeah, and I really think that's what the pick is. It's depth. They're not looking at this kid to come in and crack the lineup anytime soon. But, you know, gives them some depth, gives them some third down help, so especially in run situations.
You know, the most interesting thing for me, Tony, looking at this whole draft is, yeah, you knew the quarterback situation, you knew the wide receiver situation. I just didn't think that most of the picks would go on the offensive side of the football, knowing what Jeff Fisher was like. But they're dedicated to that. I think part of it having, you know, trading up for that first pick, you got to put some guys around him. So they sort of kind of went away from, you know, they already got that young defense, but that's just been part of the Rams draft for so long, is they like getting all those defensive players. And to only get one was just kind of the most shocking thing for me.
I think part of what happens, like you said, Ryan, is when you have that number one pick, but then you're not picking again until the fourth round, you've got to kind of reconfigure your thought process, and you've got to go with, what can we do? Who can we bring in to help that new number one quarterback? And what are we missing, not overall as a team, but what are we missing overall as part of that wheel process with the new quarterback? And so I think that's where you wind up going to the offensive side of the ball and getting them some downfield help.
Well, and I mean, if you look at their season last year, they only had 11 receiving touchdowns the entire year long, which is just a shockingly low number, lowest number in the league. And, you know, Tavon Austin is their number one wide receiver, and he's a really useful guy, an explosive guy, but he's not the kind of guy that does stretch the field. And so I thought going into the draft, their biggest weakness was in terms of explosive players or guys that could give them explosiveness, because they have spent so much time building a defense the last couple of years, and then building the offensive line really last year along with taking Gurley. It seemed like to me this was the next logical step. If you were to look at just the entire draft, including Goff at number one, and then these five picks in rounds 4, 5, 6, you've looked at every team in the league. What letter grade would you give this draft?
I mean, for the Rams specifically, I would give them a B+. And I say that because, again, while they got Goff, and then beyond that, you're not going to get the big name standout, two-time All-American from a major college. It's just not going to be there by the time you pick again in the fourth round. So what do? Well, we build whatever options we can create, because I agree with you on Austin, Steve, and I agree with your assessment of them completely. But what they've done now is they've put parts around Austin so that in passing down, the defenses aren't going to be able to focus so much of their attention on him, because you're going to have to cover Farrow Cooper wide. You know, if Thomas is on the field, you're going to have to respect his speed and his ability to go over the middle with his strong hands. You're going to have to be able to respect Higbee's ability to go into a tight slot. So what they've done now is create options so that it's not just Goff to Austin or turn around and hand off to Gurley. We've got more of a multifaceted offense now if you're the Rams.
The Rams are in a really tough division. What's weird about the Rams is they play really well in their division. I mean, they were 4-2 in a division that included Arizona, Seattle, and the Niners. They actually beat Seattle twice. But they're going to see each of those three teams twice. How did Arizona, Seattle, and San Francisco fare in this draft?
Yeah, I think, Arizona, for one, I mean, they went and got one of the big name, one of the big name players that so many people wanted with Robert and Condice. Now, you also have to worry that there were a lot of off the field problems with this kid, but he definitely has the talent. So it was a good use of their first round pick, especially since you're picking so far down 29th. Seattle. I was a little surprised. I mean, they needed offensive line help, and to get Jermaine Ifedi from Texas A&M surprised me a little bit, just because I thought there were better offensive tackles still available on the board. And, San Francisco honestly has so many problems on offense right now that it's kind of, you have so many problems on offense and you wind up taking a guard. And, Josh Garnett from Stanford is a good guard. He's very high quality. Stanford's got great offensive line.
Go figure. Stanford offensive lineman.
Right. Exactly. But out of all the options that you have, and out of all the things that your offense needs, that was your number one first round pick. I kind of honestly didn't get it, quite frankly.
Hey, Tony, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yep. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Just when we were watching the first round,
I love a podcast. Everybody can just talk.
We can just talk.
This is what I like about podcast. On the radio show, you step on each other. It sounds awful. And a podcast,
none of us in the same room. It's right. Hard to, you can't really tell. But one of the things I was watching, because we talked so much about the quarterbacks, in the first round of this draft, was really watching like what was going on with Paxton Lynch. I thought Cleveland might get him when they traded down. I think they got to 15 or so. They end up getting with the Rams. I think that's what was right. They got the Rams pick. And then, of course, Denver trades up a few spots and gets him later in the first round. How did you think that all played out? Was that kind of surprising to you where Lynch ended up?
Lynch is a bit of a wild card, I think, like we talked about last time. He's got all the physical tools, but he's still learning to throw a football at a high level. Not to be repetitious, but just kind of to go back on what we talked about last time. He barely threw the ball throughout his entire high school career, maybe 45, 50 passes, because they ran a wing T offense when he went. So he didn't even learn to throw a football properly until he got to Memphis. You add to that his size, where he's 6'6", 6'7". He's got a little bit of a hitch that drops his arm down a little bit when he's throwing, which you're not going to be able to do in the NFL. You're not going to be able to get away with that. So I'm not surprised he dropped to Denver. I knew he would go first round. I was confident he would go first round, despite some of the other, draft analysts. Todd McShay was pulling his hair out when Lynch went in the first round, because he was so positive that he'd be a third round quarterback.
I love when those guys
are
wrong.
He got into a spat, like we talked about with Lee Steinberg, Paxton Lynch's agent. And, when these are the best quarterbacks that are available in the draft, there wasn't much question he was going to go first round. He'll be a good fit in Denver, but it's going to take some time before he's prime time ready.
All right. So we're talking of quarterbacks. I'm just curious about this one. Hugh Jackson in Cleveland, they kept trading down. And this is Paul DePodesta is now involved there, so they're trying to stockpile as many picks as they can, not just for this year, but for next year. But they identified, apparently, Hugh Jackson and the front office there identified Cody Kessler as their quarterback of the future. I will be honest, I have never viewed Cody Kessler as an NFL quarterback. Tremendous college quarterback, never viewed him as an NFL quarterback. What do you and also Ryan, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I mean, I followed him since high school, and I always felt that the arm strength thing wasn't there. I was at the Army All-American Bowl in San Antonio, Texas, when Cody Kessler and Max Whittick were both USC commits. They were both playing in the game, and I'd watch practice, and you'd see Whittick throw. They were both in All-Star games. You would see Whittick throw in those games. It's just like this tight spiral on a bullet, and Kessler would throw it and just be kind of like lofted up there a little bit. And he never really had that arm strength. And that, to me, I agree with you. I just didn't see that as an NFL type of caliber arm, making those throws, those outs that are, they're maybe only 15 yards down the field, but it's like a 35 yard throw that you got to throw on a rope. I just never saw him do that a whole lot in college. So for him to go in the third round, I was surprised by it.
Yeah, I would agree with Ryan in the sense of, He doesn't have a lot of particular arm strength. I can see him playing in the NFL. I can't see him starting ever. He doesn't have the arm strength to be a regular starter. And part of the challenges he had at USC, and part of it was due to, you know, the various transitions and head coaches and offensive schemes changing and things like that. But that when he was forced out of the pocket and had to run, you could really see where he couldn't make it downfield with that arm. And I think that that's, you know, that's an impediment, obviously, in the NFL. When he went back, when USC went back to more of a pro style offense and he was able to drop straight back, you know, five step drop, he did fine. His accuracy was fine. Again, he's still not going to chuck the ball 45 yards downfield, but his accuracy was pretty good. I can see him hanging on for a handful of years as a backup quarterback somewhere, but a third round pick was really surprising.
Yeah, that felt when I heard it, I thought that sounded like a reach. I thought he was a second day or a third day of the draft guy. I thought he was a 4, 5, 6
right.
guy, and was surprised that he went in the third. But you know, he's everything out of Cleveland is that Jackson identified him as potentially the guy. So he's obviously seeing something other than we are.
He might start. He might get some starts this year. I mean,
I read some NFL.com people who say that he could be expected to start like by week 7. Somebody said, you know, when is each guy going to potentially start by? On a scale, Jared Goff was the opener, and Cody Kessler was listed as week 7 for the Browns. So somebody somewhere is obviously much higher on his NFL potential than we are. And by the way, Ryan and I have, you know, total USC football fans. I mean, I'd like nothing better for the kid than to be successful. I just never quite saw it.
You know what? It's Cleveland. Who knows?
Yeah. It is
honestly.
Cleveland.
Here's the thing. Because it's Cleveland.
Yeah.
It's Cleveland. We do know. Yeah. There's a real disaster risk there. All right. One last thought. Since you're a Bruin fan, the fall of Miles Jack and where he went wound up.
Wow. Yeah. That was not from a Bruin perspective so much, because I'll try and remain objective. From a football standpoint of seeing how good this kid was when he was healthy, and watching what happened to him during the draft was painful, painful to observe. And I got to tell you, a lot of that, and I don't know who his agent is, but a lot of this falls on his agent, because part of the reason he fell, I mean, he gave an interview the night before the draft to the New York Post. And he talked about specifics with the knee injury. And, you know, I'm no Dr. James Clapper here, but, you know, I looked up what he's got. It's called a chondral defect, which is a degenerative problem with the cartilage in the knee. And he admitted in the interview that he's hoping to get 3, maybe 4 years out of the knee before he potentially has to face microfracture surgery. Those words will scare any NFL team, because as often as not, that is career-ending surgery. And the fact that he was allowed to give this interview the night before the draft is unconscionable to me. And once he did it, and once all the chatter started coming out on early draft day about the severity of the knee problem, the fact that he was still sitting there in the green room during watching the first round, again, unconscionable. I cannot believe that his agent let these things happen. You know, look, he fell all the way down to the second round. He's going to Jacksonville. Jacksonville did a good job of shoring up their defense, and Jack can certainly play. He apparently is 85 to 90% healthy right now, so he's going to need some more time to rehab the knee. No doubt that he can play this season. It was a question of how long can he play, and teams are not going to spend top 10 draft pick money on a kid who may not be around 2 or 3 years from now because of a knee problem that already exists.
Hey, yeah. Overall, it wasn't a bad day though for UCLA, or a bad weekend with 7 picks going. So that, I mean, it was pretty good. They had one first rounder too, even though it wasn't Jack.
Right. Yeah. And Kenny Clark to Green Bay was a terrific pick. I mean, Dayton Jones from UCLA has had a great first couple of years at Green Bay, and now he's getting Walker there, or Clark there rather. It was a super pick. And yeah, UCLA had a great weekend, you know, had some guys who didn't get drafted, but within 24 hours signed non-drafted free agent contracts. So they'll get tryouts at camp and things like that. And, I think it was 11 players overall that wound up going from UCLA. So, you know, it's, look, it was great. If you're UCLA, if you're a UCLA follower, then you got to sit there and ask, wow, they had 11 players go to the NFL. How come they didn't have more than 8 wins last year?
Yeah. Yeah. How, boy, and I'm trying to remember that last game was really bad, wasn't it? What was that last one?
I'll rub it in, Steve.
Was that the one at the Coliseum?
No, there was a bowl game. We erased that with a loss in a bowl game after.
Yeah, no, he doubled down on bad, exactly. All right. Well, listen, Tony, thank you very much. All great detail for hardcore Ram fans who are getting ready, looking ahead to next year. Again, as we're recording this, Rams rookie orientation OTAs are going on right now. So they are down in Oxnard, and all those guys, Tyler Higbee and Pharaoh Cooper, and Michael Thomas are all down there right now, meeting with the coaches and getting ready to sign their contracts. So
they're working on the beach too, Steve.
Say it again.
They're working out on the beach down there too.
Oh yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, it's very cool. So Tony, again, it's Tony Siracusa, lastwordonsports.com. And Tony, for everybody listening, what is your Twitter handle?
@ Tony Bruin.
Cool. Awesome work, man. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks, Tony.
Thanks, guys. Glad to do it.
All right. And Ryan, another Ramble On podcast in the books. Exciting time as we start getting closer to training camp. And Stan Kroenke, I don't know if you saw this week. He apparently is saying that he had a big role in selecting Kurt Warner back in 99 as a third string quarterback, and that tended to work out okay. And also had high hopes for Jared Goff and is looking for lightning to strike twice. So maybe with Stan's seal of approval, Jared Goff is off for a big career.
He seems to have the Midas touch, Steve. And I'm really excited. Obviously, everyone's excited about the stadium, but Jared Goff could be like this, you know, this crown jewel that'll be going into the stadium 3 years from now. He could be an NFL superstar. That's what, of course, the Rams fans are hoping for. But yeah, with Kroenke's approval, you know, feel a little better about it, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Kroenke's done, you know, he's been right billions and billions of times.
He certainly has. I'd like to be right just a small percentage of the times he's been right.
You know what? For the day, I'd like to be right 1,000 times just for today. All right. That wraps up the Ramble On podcast. Go ahead and tell them all the good stuff there, Ryan, that you do on the Peristyle podcast. Do that.
Yeah, RamsRambleOn.com. That's where you can find the show. Go to iTunes.com, search for Ramble On Podcast. Follow us on LA_RamsReport. And LARamsReport.com is our Scout.com home. So we're part of the Scout Network covering the Los Angeles Rams. So lots of good stuff there. Thanks to Tony. Thanks to Steve. Thanks for tuning in to the Ramble On Podcast. And we will talk to you next time.